Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. I'm always looking to help the Next Level Soul audience take their soul to the next level. And I've been able to partner with Mind Valley to present you guys with a ton of free masterclasses between 60 and 90 minutes covering mind, body, soul, relationships, and conscious entrepreneurship. Some of these masterclasses are taught by spiritual masters, relationship experts, best-selling authors, legends in the personal growth and spirituality space, and so much more. So if you want to sign up for any of our free mind, body, and soul masterclasses, just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/free. Now, today on the show, we have Michael Tamura, who's a spiritual teacher, clairvoyant visionary, radio show host, and the author of You Are the Answer. Michael and I had a fantastic conversation about his journey into spirituality, how he discovered his talents, his gifts, how he's been able to use those over the last 48 years, teaching people, and so much more. So let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show, Michael J. Tamura. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We had a wonderful little pre-interview, and it was getting to know each other. We already know each other, obviously, at a different level, but getting to know each other a little bit. I'm a fan of your work, sir. And another guest of ours, Bill Bennett, who was on the show talking about intuition. That's how I discovered you, was through his documentary. And then I started doing research about you. I was like, wow, Michael make a fantastic conversation. So, and here you are. You said yes, yeah. Very quickly. Very quickly, you said yes.
Materialized.
And boom, I brought you into my existence. So I appreciate you coming, my friend. We're gonna talk about a lot of different things, but also to promote your amazing book, You Are the Answer, as well. Now, the first question I have for you is, how did you begin your spiritual journey?
I was born.
Next question.
Yeah. It's a long story. Well, I came in, the difficulty I had early on in childhood is not having the vocabulary, not having the life experience here in this day and age and body to put things into words. So everything was knowingness and seeing, but there was no way to communicate it for me. I tried my best, mm-hmm. but right from the beginning of when you're born, you know, babies don't come out speaking English or Russian or German or any other language. And so I was wondering, okay, how do you communicate with people? They're not hearing me. They don't see me. They don't hear me. They're not aware that I'm communicating with them. And then what I get back, it's nothing hostile or negative. It's just people are people. And when they see a baby, they go, coochie, coochie, coo, and things of that nature. And that's a type of communication. But I was interested in getting right down to business. And it took me a few years. And as a child, I realized, oh yeah, nobody's going to hear me until I get to be an old man. People don't tend to listen to kids. And because they think kids don't know anything.
Right.
And it took me a long time to start to really put two and two together in terms of, oh yeah, they're looking at my body. I'm looking at them as souls, as the spiritual being they are. and are, it's like this.
Of course, two different languages.
And so my early part of my life was just a matter of me trying to get into communication. And I didn't realize for quite a few years, every time I decided, well, that didn't work. For example, the very first level of communication I had going was very much on a geometrical level. I saw everything in geometry, these structures. And I would walk up to somebody and all this, it looked like a geodesic dome. I'd say, well, this is what's going on with you. And it just, not even a recognition that I even said anything. So I did that repeatedly, and same response every time is there's no communication. It's just, I say, look at this. I didn't realize they didn't see what I was seeing. That took me a long time. And so one day I finally said, this is not working. And that disappeared. I didn't see for many years after that, I didn't see the geometry anymore. But in its place, I start to see auras. What I know now is auras, but just colors around. And being a little kid, you know, what, 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old, I don't have the vocabulary. So once I had the opportunity to communicate to somebody about it, they asked, you know, says, well, how do you know that? And I said, well, the colored cloud around you changed colors. And again, didn't register. And I was growing up in Japan, by the way, you know, but one day, a couple of years later, I don't know who she was. She was in our house, this Japanese woman. She wasn't a relative, but maybe she was a friend or acquaintance of my parents or something. And I ended up in one room just with her. And she just was chatting about something. And I noticed she really needed help. And she was, what would you call it? Thinking about problems that, you know, she needed help with. So I started to talk about that, and she looks, she says, how do you know that? And I said, well, your colored clouds are showing me this. And it says, clouds don't have colors. And so I'm trying to explain the best I can. I said, well, yeah, you know, clouds in the sky don't have really a lot of colors, but the clouds around people have colors. And she goes, people don't have clouds around them. What did I say else? I said, well, I thought I was using the wrong word. So I said, it's the air around people have different colors and they say different things. And she goes, air doesn't have colors.
Of course.
And that's the point when I finally said, forget it. This is not working. And the colored clouds, the aura went away. Well, it didn't completely go away like the geometry went away, but it receded into the background. So I still saw colors around people, but it was more faint, you know, in the background. And what came to the foreground more was the physical body. Until then, the physicality of things wasn't that of a big deal for me. It just was something that's there. Mm-hmm. But the aura and the energy and the higher level of one's consciousness was what was important and interesting to me. But by that time, I got back down to the physical, and in the meantime, I had trouble in school. Mm-hmm. I got passed around every year from after first grade until sixth grade, I got tossed around between the gifted class and the other end, what the kids called the retardo class. Mm-hmm. And every year, I 1 year I'm in the gifted class, the next year, obviously the teacher said he doesn't belong here. So I get demoted down to the, you know, the remedial class. And then after that year in the remedial class, the teacher realizes he doesn't belong here. He belongs in the gifted class. So I went back and forth. And one of the things I had difficulty with was the teachers, especially asking me in the middle of whatever class we were having, Michael, what do you think about that? And I didn't have any thoughts. And I just have a total empty mind. And the teacher would say, well, what do you think? What's your opinion? What do you have an opinion about this? And I said, no. And the only response I could figure out is I just told the truth. I don't know what you're wanting. So that didn't go over very well. And then the other thing was taking a test in grade school. And I just know many of the answers. So I write down the answers. And then the teacher invariably would come and point to a certain question and says, how did you get this answer? And I would say, I don't know. Says, then it became, whose test were you copying?
Of course.
So that was a difficult. So I really start to, but all that gave me a lot more impetus to learn to communicate. I just was really interested in communication. How do you get into communication with people? Because everything I was trying didn't seem to work. Mm-hmm. And finally, by halfway through fifth grade, I realized what was missing. I watched all the students who were considered good students. They got A's and, you know, good grades and everything. And every one of them was giving reason to things. And they had thoughts about whatever the question was about. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh. And then I finally got dawned on me, oh yeah, I could make up reasons for things. So I start making up reasons. And I learned that the more complicated the reasons were and the better it sounded, the more acceptance it got. And the teacher liked it and I got better grades. And next thing, I'm straight A student.
You figured out how to hack the system. You understood.
Exactly. Fine. Yeah.
You figured the system out. You're like, oh, these are the rules. Okay. I'll just do this just to get by.
Yeah. So junior high and high school, I aced everything. Right. And got popular. I got voted into different positions in school and all that kind of stuff. And I had free reign of everything because I did so well. But I noticed there was an increasing emptiness. What used to be an empty mind that was filled with peace and gentleness and kindness, and that went away, and something's missing. Something very important, big, is missing. And it got bigger and bigger. And it seemed like there's like a hole inside of me that got pulled out. And I didn't like that. And so I start to look at the irony of here, I got everything a high school student would want to have, awards and all those kind of scholarships get thrown my way, all that stuff. And I wasn't happy inside. So that's when I decided, you know, I got to get out of here. So I got out of high school. Well, from about 12 years old, I knew I had to come to California.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
But nobody was going to let me, as a 12-year-old, go to California on my own from Tokyo. And so it took me about four more years. By the time I was 16, junior in high school, I figured out, oh, the only thing I would need to stay one more year in high school was senior English, because they wouldn't let you take senior English until you were a senior. Everything else I already finished. I asked the principal everything. No go. I didn't know about karmic relationships. Everyone in the faculty I got along with famously, except the principal. I didn't know the principal. The principal didn't know me, but he had a thing out for me. Anything I asked for, it was a flat out no, just because. And so I started to go, okay, somehow I got to get out of here. And that's when all kinds of miracles start to happen. The chancellor of the University of California shows up in this dinky little school. My graduating class was 48 people. And we're told there's a special assembly going on. You have to come to go to the gym. This man is speaking. And I listened to the whole thing. It was like a pep talk for college, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, he could help me. And so I cornered him after the talk and said, this is my situation. I really would like to go to college now instead of wait an extra year. Can you help me? And he says, well, let's go to the office. And he checked out my transcripts, pulls out from his briefcase this stack of papers, says, I have a meeting, a 20-minute meeting. Do the best you can. Fill out the application to the University of California and hand it to me before I leave. I sat down there on the stairs and just start writing and filling out everything, even writing little essays really fast. He comes out about 20 minutes later. I hand it to him. He puts it in his attaché case and he says, okay, you'll be hearing from my office in a couple of weeks. I said, thank you very much. Well, a couple of weeks later, I get a letter of acceptance with his personal written letter to me about the situation and how I can do it. And he says, okay, you're accepted. You start in the fall. And then the final line was, all you have to do is get your principal to sign off here.
Ouch.
And I'm going, oh, but that's the problem. I could get everybody else to sign off, but not the principal. Of course, I took it to the principal. I figured if he read this letter from the chancellor of, you know, UC Systems, he would have to sign it. He looked at it, said, no. You got to finish your senior year here or else I won't graduate you and you can't go to college.
What an ass. What a karmic ass.
Yeah, I don't know if it would have helped if I knew about karma back then, but you know, that's the way it went. And so then I said, okay, I got to find some other way of getting through this. I'm home, and this was a Friday night. My dad comes home, as usual, and uncharacteristically, he says, are you busy tomorrow, Saturday? I said, and uncharacteristically, my schedule is completely open. Usually, Saturdays were completely full. I said, yeah, I'm totally free. He said, would you caddy for me? He was an avid golfer. And we have a big tournament tomorrow, and I didn't get a caddy. You're supposed to reserve, and there won't be many available. And I didn't know how to caddy, but I said, sure. You know, carrying a bag around for you for 18 holes, I could do that. So we show up the next morning, and were assigned to this foursome, get introduced. Well, the fourth person that got introduced in our foursome was my principal's boss's 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 boss. He was the head honcho of the entire Department of U.S. Department of Defense school systems in the entire Far East, not just Japan, but the entire Far East, all the military based schools. And so I thought, wow. And so then my poor dad, I said, Dad, I can't caddy for you. My future depends on this. And I jumped ship and offered to caddy for this guy. He didn't have a caddy either. And he says, oh, that would be great. So we got to talk. He did most of the talking. I laid out right at the before the first hole, I laid out what my situation was and what I wanted to do. Needed to go to college now. And for the next 18 holes, over 3 hours, he did most of the talking. And most of it was trying to discourage me from going to college when I was too young. And so he gave me all the ins and outs and everything. And on the 18th hole, he was a single handicap, you know, player, very good. And he says, okay. And I'm handing him the putter. And this is a long, like a 12-foot putt. He's lining it up. He says, okay, before I sink this putt, he says, I said everything I wanted to say to you about what your situation is. Do you still feel the same way, or have you changed your mind, or do you want to think about it, or where are you with everything? I said, oh, absolutely not. I'm going one way or the other. I have to get over there. And he says, okay, I can't, even though I'm not really tending to want to do that, but he says, I can't be a hypocrite because I did exactly at 16, I did exactly the same thing you're about to do. So I can't be a hypocrite and tell you no. So I will talk to your principal first thing Monday morning. Bingo.
How'd that work out? Okay then.
Oh yeah, it was the contentious. First thing Monday morning, I get a little note from the secretary, please come to the principal's office. I said, okay, I'm going to the principal's office, expecting to see the principal. And I said, I'm here to see the principal. She said, oh, he left for the day. But he left you this letter. He had signed it, the thing that had to be signed. But he had to leave because he
couldn't see you. He couldn't, yeah, he couldn't take it.
Yeah, he couldn't take it. But
it's so
that's
funny.
How I ended up in California.
It's so funny the way the world works, Michael, because, you know, when... And somebody, I mean, even in my lifetime, you know, you want something to happen, and then you try every which way to do it. But then, you know, there's blocks everywhere you go towards that goal. And you really just, at a certain point, you just kind of give in and just like, okay, I have to just trust that something is going to happen at one point or another. And then all of a sudden, a phone call comes in.
Exactly.
Or a friend goes, hey. And it's never ceases to amaze me. I still remember the day that I was about to go bankrupt when I was 27, and my worst time in my life. I'm 3 days away from signing the paperwork, and I said, and I yelled out to God, and I said, hey, I want to pay my debts, but I need some help here, man. I need a job. Can you help me out? I will work as hard as I can to get out of this hole, but I need a little help. If not, I'm going to sign these papers in 2 days. Mm-hmm. The next morning, I get a phone call from my first boss ever. And he said, hey, I don't know if you're looking for any work or not, because I hadn't talked to him in forever. He goes, but they're looking for someone to edit promos at this network up in Palm Beach. And I got in my car, I was living in Miami at the time. I got in my car, went up there, took the meeting, showed them my demo reel. They hired me right on the spot. And then after that, I got another job. So I was doing two jobs at the same time. Then after that, I got paid full time and became the highest paid editor in Florida, because I asked for a ridiculous amount of money at the time, because someone suggested, hey, ask for like $30,000 or $40,000 more than anybody else will. See what they'll do. Mm. and they gave it to me. and then the rest is history. Then I opened up my own business, but it all started from that one phone call. And it was so funny because years later, I had the opportunity to pay back my boss, who became really hard on his luck too. And I was able to give him a helping hand when he was in the dire straits as well. And I gave him something that was able to help him rebuild from where he was. So it's just so funny how those things, and people could say coincidence, and maybe I don't buy that. It's there is no real coincidence. Everything.
It's a miracle.
It's a like, no, it's not a miracle. There's a plan. And even the worst, and I've said this on the show many times before, is like, even the worst things that happen to you in life, you think are horrible at the moment. But if you truly look back years later, you go, okay, thank God I didn't go out with that girl. Mm-hmm. Thank God I didn't get that job. Thank God I didn't get that opportunity. Thank God at this or that. It just seems to me that that we are being guided through this life. And we do have free will. So we tend to go off the rails a bit sometimes. And there's always something there to kind of push us back.
Exactly.
And if we don't listen, the nudge turns into a push. The push turns into a punch in the face. And if the punch in the face doesn't work, then the sledgehammer comes in, then the car comes in, and it just keeps going until you finally get it. You're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be wanting to become an astronaut. This is probably not my path. Maybe I should be going to school to do something else, or maybe I should really be a singer, or really just to write a book. I don't know what it is, but it's always so fascinating. Which brings me to my next question. How do people discover their soul's divine purpose in this life? Because I feel that so many of us feel so lost in life, trying to figure out, you know, we're doing the 9 to 5, we're doing, you know, the rat race kind of thing. You know, even when I got that job that I was telling you about, at the moment, I was extremely grateful and it did help me. But there was a moment in time when that job didn't serve a purpose anymore. And then I started becoming angry and bitter. I'm like, I don't want to keep doing this for another 10 years. Like, this is not what I want to be. So then I got fired from that job, because what happened? A new supervisor shows up. Him and I did not click at all. And they finagled a way to get me fired. And then a week later, I launched my own post-production company. And then I went off to the races from there and had that for a decade or more. But you see, it's just so funny. It's like, I was like, oh, I'm so unhappy here, but I can't leave because the money's so good. And I needed something to give me that push. And they're like, oh, here you go. Just drop this dude in here. He'll help you out. So, and at the time I was angry, but when I left, I was like, oh, this is the best thing that could have happened to me. So how do you find that purpose? How do you find, if you're not getting those karmic guys or gals that come in and push you in the right direction, how do you find your own soul's divine purpose?
Well, you had part of the key when you said there's a lot of people who are searching and they're kind of lost in their life in the world. And that's part of the first part of the key, is they're lost in the world. Jesus mentioned we're in the world, but not of it. Almost everybody goes through, especially in childhood, but some people all the way through adulthood, they feel like, I don't belong. I don't belong here. I don't fit in. We're not meant to fit in here. This world is temporary at best. And we're just popping in for a little education. That's all it is here, is this world is our school as souls, as spiritual beings. And as we come in, we have all these experiences that we might judge as good or bad or blah or whatever, but those are all judgments. And if we step out of any of those judgments and see things for the way they are, then we don't have to go through that. Something happens and then you get all upset and angry and resentful, blah, blah, blah. And then something else happens and like that. Life isn't things happening to you. It's It's what you really make of it. It's when you, everybody has experiences of all kinds. And some of it, yes, is karmic. Others, as you go along further and further on purpose, on your purpose, it gets less and less karmic and more creative.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Mm-hmm. You start to realize, oh, I'm creating this whole thing. We do that all along anyway, even if it's karmic. But we start to realize, oh, yeah. So if I create this thing that is very unpleasant or lousy, I could create something different. And we start to be more proactive. Our soul purpose is very simple across the board. It's the same for all of us. It's to discover who we truly are and not only be it, but live it. That may sound a little bit strange because, okay, how can we be not who we are?
Right.
Well, part of the reason the world is so crazy in terms of the people, most people are not being anything close to who they really are.
Right.
So that's where the problem begins. So then that lost feeling is very, very important. People tend to jump to a conclusion too fast all the time. When they experience that first not belonging here, no matter how hard they try, they just don't fit in, right? That says something. Oh, the question they need to be asking themselves is, oh, am I meant to fit in here? No. It's like you go to school, but you don't live in school. Yeah, that's not your home. You go to school, and then when you're done with school, you go home. That's what we do as souls, as spiritual beings. We come to school, we spend our, you know, semester or 100 semesters or whatever. And when we finish our learning that we came here to learn, the final exam on every piece of learning is living it. Living what, that's why intellectual learning is just very, very, very preliminary. It's just to kind of get interested or understand something. But the real learning doesn't start until you start to do it, whatever it is. Until you start to practice it, until you start to be able to live it, demonstrate it. I guess that's what's called walking your talk, right? It's walking your understanding, living your learning.
Now, Michael, what part of does meditation play in your spiritual practice? Because I've been meditating for many, many years now, and it's really tremendously transformed my life. And
yes,
and as the more you do it, the better you get at it, and it's just opened up doors that I've never had opened before. And also my blood sugar's down, my stress level's down, my blood work is fantastic. So what part does that help you in your spiritual journey?
100%.
110%?
110%, yes. Meditation, you know, of course, when I'm growing up, I didn't know the word.
Right.
But the only place I can find where I could just be quiet and go within was in the bathroom.
as many of us do, sir, as many of us do.
So I discovered that, oh yeah, I don't need to go to the bathroom, but if I go there and sit there and close the door, nobody bothered me. Of course, I grew up in Japan, you know, and everyone's very, very polite and respectful. So when I'm in the bathroom, the people's attention doesn't even come in on a psychic energy level. Mm-hmm. So I felt I had this lots of space and I could just, what I would now call meditate. I go within and I experience all these different things. So that was part of my life from the very beginning. And I discovered, you know, there's, well, I don't know when I actually learned about this idea called meditation, much later in life. And then, of course, there's different kinds of practices, this methods of meditation, everything. And I thought, oh, anytime I tried anything, oh, yeah, this is what I've always done in the first place. And then when I met my teacher, I was 20 years old, and it was a phenomenal experience because, well, it's a very, very long story, so I won't get into it.
Fair enough.
But it was at a time, you know, at 20 years old, I'm going, okay, I don't know what this place is. I don't know what this man's, you know, who the master of the house is here. But I just walked in when I was told to show up, and a bunch of people are going in. So I just followed them and go upstairs. And the next thing that happens, all the other rooms run out. So I had my friend with me. And I says, okay, we'll just keep on going until there's a room that we can go into like everybody else is going into. And each of the, this is only like four rooms. We're in the last room and there's not any chairs except for one for my friend. So I sat on the floor in the corner, trying to look spiritual and metaphysical,
obviously.
So I'm sitting there in a kind of a lotus position in the corner to see what's going to happen. And a couple of young people come in, they sit down in a chair and they face another person sitting in a chair across from them. And they start to say things and do things. And I can tell the energy's stepped up. And I'm listening to what they're saying, and made, a lot of it made sense. At that point, I didn't know anything about clairvoyant readings, right? People sitting and looking at each other's auras and things like that. And so I was fascinated. I says, huh, it's very interesting. And then all of a sudden, the whole room fills up with, becomes golden. It's just this beautiful gold light fills the whole place up. And what I noticed about how it affected everybody else was they start to kind of titter, you know, laugh a little, giggle, and everything lightened up. Then the door blasts open. I mean, with quite a bit of force, it's bang, bang. And this guy with a bit, you know, a pretty big belly and kind of balding a little bit, and he just walks in, and he goes to, there is a man and a woman doing the reading, and he puts his hands, he kind of slams his hands down on the shoulders of the woman and says something to her, and she kind of jumps, and then he says something like, you know, you're not grounded enough. and then he looks over and he looks down at me and he rolls his eyes up and he goes, oh no, another Chinaman in a Japanese body.
Wow.
And it just struck me right between the eyes, so to speak. And that's it. He turns around, walks out the door, and closes the door. And I'm going, and everybody else is like looking at, what was that about? And I'm going, somehow it struck a chord. And I didn't know exactly what he was talking about, but I knew it had nothing to do with, you know, racism or anything like that.
Right, yeah.
It was complete, some kind of a truth. And it was pretty funny as well. But I thought, okay, you know what? That's the guy. I'm sure he's the master of this place. And then things kind of settle down and continue for another 20 minutes or so. Same exact thing happens. The room fills up with this golden energy. And then the door slams open. The same guy walks in. And he looks up down at me and he says, oh, you're still here? Here, all this work to look spiritual and metaphysical and everything. Yeah, out the window. And then he turns to my friend and says, oh, come over here. And so he gets a chair in the middle of the room that we're on half of this room, and the two people reading the other person's on the other half. And he pulls the chair up and says, you come over here. And so she looks around, she goes, okay. And she sits down on the chair. So basically she's about 10 feet, 8 feet away from me, directly in front, facing me. And he's behind her and he puts his shoulder, his hands on her shoulders first and kind of closes his eyes and he's going like this. And then he looks over her head, the top of her head. So it's almost like he's looking down inside her head. And he starts to say things like, oh, you know, when you were 4 years old and you got that, your dad got you that red tricycle that you loved for Christmas and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, oh, yeah. And then he says, and then you left it out and it was kind of on the side, on the driveway leading out of your front door. And you were running out and you tripped on it and cracked your head kind of, and you got into a lot of trouble. And she goes, yeah. So he continues like that, specific, wow, you know, incidents in her life. And she, every time he says, well, this and that, and she goes,
not fazed by any of this.
No, she's kind of surprised and going, It's like, you know, this guy knows her life. And next thing he goes, okay, what I'm doing now is I'm just going to clear out your head and I'm going to put you back in the center of your head. And that sounded kind of interesting. And she goes, okay. And he's putting his fingers on his top of her head and everything. And then he says, okay, you ready? I want you to be in the center of your head. And then I'm going to put some energy in your head. And when you feel that your head is completely full of this energy, I want you to nod your head. Let me know it's completely full, or just say it's full. She goes, okay. And he's closing his eyes and doing something. Next thing, she goes, okay, it's full. And he yanks his hands away from her head. What I experienced at that moment, the entire room turned bright white. It's like a blizzard, you know, you can't see anything else except for the
white out.
It's a complete white out, but it's white out light, clear, white, bright light. I couldn't see her. I couldn't see the room. I couldn't see anything. And that just was just for an instant. And then it got normal, but it wasn't normal. When that happened, I noticed with my physical eyes, I could see every little speck on the, probably the room was about 12 feet long, you know, from me to the end of the wall. I could see every little speck on that wall. Everything was sparkling. It's like every atom in that room was sparkling. And then I looked at her, my friend's eyes. It was just blazing light. And just, she's like sitting there, bing. And he goes, now you're in the center of your head. And she goes, okay, how do you feel? fantastic.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And I'm going, holy moly, I feel incredible. It's just like
just
everything.
Just being right. In the area, you feel it. So, but Michael, how do you do that? Can you show us how to do that, Michael?
Well, you must be psychic, because right at that moment, I decided I'm not leaving this place until I learn how to do that.
Okay.
And so then after he's finished with her, he looks at me and says, hey, do you want one of these readings? And I go, sure. Why not? And he tells the other two, he says, this was like 11:30 at night. Mm-hmm. He says, you guys too tired? You want to go home or you want to give this guy a reading? And they go, hey, we'll give him a reading. And so I got to sit in front of them. And this was the next part where they look at me and the main guy who was sitting there just starts to go like this, right? And he says, you know what? Oh, what I was thinking was, oh, I'm going to match them on an energy level to experience what they're going through, right? And he goes, oh, hang on. You're reading us. We can't really read you very easily if you're reading us. So tonight, maybe tomorrow night you can read us, but tonight you have to let us read you. And so we need you to back off your energy and let us read you. I go, hot damn, it's working. But I felt bad that, oh, I don't get to do this. So I said, okay. And they go, oh yeah, that's much better. And they gave me a reading. It was quite good, you know. But what got in, I was interested in, I want to learn this stuff. And that's where I started the training with this teacher. And his name was Lewis Bostwick, and he's passed away, 20 years ago, 20, mm-hmm. 25 years ago, something like that. But he still comes around.
He still shows up every once in a while.
He shows up quite a bit. So anyway, that was...
It's a fascinating story. Thinking about things like this, it seemed like when she was talking about memories and stuff, when you were talking about the memories in her head and mm-hmm, things, mm-hmm. You know, that just something clicked in me that said, you know, that so many of us in this, as we walk the earth, we feel stuck in our lives. We feel like we're in a rut. We feel like we can't move anywhere. We feel like things aren't working for us. We're stuck in a job we don't like. We're stuck in a relationship we don't want to be in. All these things, that feeling of stuck, I think we've all felt that at one point or another in our life, you feel that.
Yes.
What advice do you have for the audience, for people who feel like they're stuck and what they can do to get out of that mindset?
That's an incredible, great question, because we all go through that in life, you know, many times. It's stuck in various levels.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But stuck is a good word. Because that's exactly what's happening. As souls, how we go about life experience, we're creating an image of everything. And this will be great for you as a filmmaker, right? Is every soul is like a video documentarian. Mm-hmm. From to give it a kind of a timeline, from inception, a soul starts to take a movie of its life experience, every moment. And that movie, just like when you make movies and you're editing, it's individual still shots, right?
Mm-hmm. 24 still frames a second.
Yeah, exactly. So then when you watch it through the projector and everything, it looks like to the audience, it looks like a continuous life going on. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what's happening here. except it's not just a sit back and watch the movie kind of a movie. It's more like a 3D super high definition video.
IMAX
video game. IMAX surround sound video game with taste and smell and everything else.
Virtual reality, if you will.
Real virtual reality. And so as we do that, that's just the total natural part of our spirit beingness, mm-hmm. is we are fully creative 24/7.
Right.
Every moment we're creating. And which means, what are we creating? Well, it starts with an image. And we call that, in general parlance, we call that imagination. When we imagine something, we're creating an image of it. So that's what we do all the time. But we're not limited to just creating the image of our experience as it happens. We're creating images on top of that. Mm-hmm. We make up stuff. So when we create those images, that's what we get stuck on. When we feel stuck in our lives, we're actually stuck on these images in our mind. And everyone's clairvoyant. Everyone sees, but most people don't recognize what they're looking at, what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They think when they close their eyes, they just see darkness, right? But that's just with their physical eyes. When you close your eyes and your physical eyes see darkness, but it's not really totally dark, is it? You know, you can see a little light coming through your eyelids. Your physical eyes never stop working. They're always working. Even with your eyes completely closed and blindfolded, the physical eyes are taking in data, you know?
It's just black. It's just like a camera lens. If you put a cover on it and you keep it running, it's just recording black.
Exactly. That's what we do. But when you step it up, your awareness to your using your what I call the eye of spirit. It's the single eye, the third eye, as far as a word for it. Then you're seeing the images in your mind. And this is what people, you were asking about the meditation. This is what people have trouble when they first start meditating. They sit down, close their eyes, they quiet themselves. And, oh, did I turn off the oven?
Right. Yeah. Can I pay that bill?
Yeah. Sure. All that. And some of it makes a little bit of sense, but others are completely random. You know, where did that thought come from? And people call that mind chatter and stuff like that. Well, where does the mind chatter come from? Are these images. Now, to make things even more complicated, we're psychic beings. We're very sensitive, aware beings. If we're not aware of the difference between the image that I'm creating versus the image that you're creating versus the image that my mother created when I was a baby, and I still have it in my mind, we can easily get stuck in trying to solve someone else's creation, someone else's image, which you can translate as someone else's problem. So my experience of most people walking around the planet, they're always trying to solve everyone else's problems. And it's impossible. No matter how capable, how powerful, how intelligent you are, you can't solve other people's creations. You could only solve your own.
So is that what makes you feel stuck?
Yes. Yeah, because stuckness isn't just an instant of stuckness, right? It's stuckness. I was stuck yesterday. I'm stuck today. I'll probably be stuck tomorrow. It goes on. Why is that? Because the person who's perfectly intelligent, perfectly capable, creative, everything is in their mind. They don't realize they're staring at a picture that was created by somebody else. And let's say the picture is one of, you know, how stupid can I get? I can't do anything right. I'm a total worthless, you know, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's many of us who've had that conversation with ourselves. Many of us.
And that's not their own picture. It's somebody, they either tried to heal somebody because they felt sorry for that person and took it on as a project, or it's somebody
telling them,
hey, you're worthless, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Or it could just be commercials you're watching, society. Exactly. You're watching, your programming. Family, program, the country you live in, the industry you're in. There's a thousand.
All of the above.
Yeah. All of the above that could tell you, like, you know, oh, if you don't look this way, you're obviously not desirable.
Yeah.
If you don't have this kind of skill set, you obviously can't make it. If you don't have a 4-year degree, you obviously can't make any money and you will die. As opposed to every billionaire out there, most of them dropped out of college. Conversation altogether.
I found that if you get the third degree, it's a lot better than the, you know, other degrees you can get in college.
Exactly. Exactly. Life experience is definitely a lot more valuable in my eyes. But no, that's very true. So because of that impression that you have, you feel less than. Yes. And because you feel less than, that means you feel stuck. And if you feel stuck, that means like, oh, I can't move forward. And that could be your spouse, that could be a friend, that could be your job, that could be your career, that could be your body. There's a thousand things that can make you feel stuck in certain sections of your life or areas in your life. And that makes all the sense in the world. I've never actually thought about it that way, but it is projections that you've picked up from others that are making you feel stuck. Because if you truly were in touch with yourself, with the that your higher self, with your true nature, nothing would make you stuck, because you would understand that this all is temporary. We're all here to learn. We're all here kind of moving along through life. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, oh, I can't lose those 10 pounds. I'm like, well, it's probably because there's a couple things you have to work out before you lose those 10 pounds.
Yeah. And whose 10 pounds are you carrying? It's Michael. Not always that way, but that's definitely,
you know, whose 10 pounds are you carrying? That's a great,
just like, you know, who am I eating for? Mothers, pregnant mothers go through that all the time without knowing. Are they eating for the baby or are they eating for, you know, it's like that.
It's very interesting. Now, Michael, there's been so many things happening in the world today. You know, this, I know I ask a lot of my guests this question because I just want to hear different perspectives on what's going on. But between the pandemic, the environment, political uprising, the brink of World War III, all these things that seem to be happening right now in the world that is, I think, one of the first times, definitely in my lifetime, that the entire world is feeling it at the same time. You know, I've never in the history that we know of, at least the history of man, that there was a moment or even a disease that took over and shut the world down, it down. I've never seen anything like that. And what those 2 years really gave the world a kind of a reset, almost a break to like get off the treadmill for a second.
Yes.
And look at your life. What's really important to you? That kind of reset thing. But with all this kind of craziness going on in the world, and it seems to not be getting better, I feel that it's getting a little bit worse.
Worse.
And I don't think we've hit the bottom yet at any stretch. What do you think this means? What is this kind of shift that's happening in humanity right now?
Well, exactly like you said, the shift itself is great. It's people waking up. And around the globe, people are waking up at the level of awareness they're at. So some people are strictly, you know, this physical body is who I am, and that's it. But they're waking up at that level. Little by little, they're going, okay, I don't want to die. You know, this is it. And so I'm going to eat healthier. Whatever. And some people are waking up more on an emotional level. And And they're going, oh yeah, I've been denying my feelings all my life and and it's killing me. Okay, I got to do something about it. Maybe I'll go have some therapy, whatever.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And the difficulties we're seeing, whether it's just, you know, so many people getting sick or being killed in the war or terrorists, whatever, all these different things happening. We're actually in World War III, but it's not the kind of world war that's like World War II or I. It's global. It's global. And you know, you hear all these stories of Armageddon, the forces of light versus the forces of darkness and all that stuff. It's not quite true that way. Forces of light doesn't have an opposite. People often think that the opposite of light is darkness, but that's not true. Light is undivided. So that which is undivided is limitless, eternal. It doesn't ever change. It doesn't alternate between light and dark. And light, the idea of light and dark here in this physical world, this world is built on dichotomies. We're in a divided world of two-ness.
Duality. Yeah.
Yeah, duality. But in spirit, in light, in full awareness, there is no division. So there are no dualities. There's no opposites. The opposite of death is not life. Or the opposite of life is not death. Life doesn't have an opposite. The opposite of death is birth. That's of here, of this world. And so what's happening as people are waking up? Waking up means there's more awareness. And as people are becoming more aware, they're less divided. But in that process, this happens in all manners of healing. Healing is simply, just like the dictionary definition, restoring to oneness. What does that mean in practical terms when we're healing ourselves or healing each other or whatever, healing our relationship? We're starting to put our awareness, we're starting to become aware of what oneness is, what non-duality is, what not being divided is. And what that brings up into the global consciousness is all the parts of ourselves that we've previously divided in our mind. And I can't stand myself. You know, that's dividing against yourself.
Do you think that, I mean, obviously I think there's a generational situation here where the older generation, much older generation than, like, say, my generation, let's say 20 or 30 years, like you, sir. you look like you're 51. The older generation that aren't enlightened, like yourself, sir, they're holding on to the ideas of what they grew up with. My generation has a foot in both, a foot in the old. But we also were born in a time where the internet was invented. Mm-hmm. So we understand the old school, and we also understand the new school, and we understand the connectivity, where my children's generation only understands that we are a global community, only mm-hmm. understands that we're interconnected. There's no other concept for them because yes. they were born in a world like that. Mm-hmm. So do you believe that that's also kind of like where a lot of this strife is coming from, where the old ways of doing things
yes.
is trying to hold on to power, trying to hold on to the old ways? You know, there's obviously in 500 years, we're not going to be burning coal. Mm-hmm. Like, hopefully, because I don't think we can survive, mm-hmm. you know? So, but the entire infrastructure is built on that. So exactly. to move that ship, it takes so much effort.
Yep.
And in a different way, like emotionally and spiritually, the pandemic gave us a moment to breathe, mm-hmm. which is a moment that nobody would have ever expected to see coming, where we shut down the whole world for a year, essentially, and gave people moments to think. Without that moment to stop, they couldn't rebuild. They couldn't rethink. They couldn't, maybe this is a different way of going. Maybe I should move somewhere else. Maybe I should not do that job I hate. Maybe mm-hmm. I should find a new purpose. But without that moment to breathe, they wouldn't have taken it. So this chaos that we're coming into right now is that moment to kind of reset.
Yes.
A lot of things that are happening. I forgot. Somebody said this great quote, in chaos is the fertile ground for change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's actually in reverse. It's the chaos comes from the change, because any kind of profound change, we have to let go of, like you said, the old stuff that's not working, and the old, especially now, old ways of thinking.
Right.
Old ways of creating and governing and everything. And basically that boils down to old ways of relating with our own selves, relating with each other, relating with the world. We can't relate with each other like way back when it's just your little family and
On the prairie,
or tribe, or whatever, and we're in a process of purification, detoxification. If you've ever done fasting, right?
Oh yes.
Well, the first hour or two after you say, "I'm going to do this fast," and wow, I feel so much clearer and lighter and everything. And give it a few hours. The next day you can't wake up in the morning, get out of bed because you got a headache. Blah, blah. That's the detox, right? To the degree that you have toxins built up, this on the physical level, it's going to, the more intense your fasting is, the more the toxins come up. That's why sometimes it's not good to do a full fasting when you've subsisted on toxic material all the time.
If you're eating McDonald's for most of your life and you go into a juice fast for like a month, just shoot yourself. It's going to be a really rough scenario for yourself.
Exactly. That's what we're doing in a global sense. That's what we're doing.
And we're fighting. So we're detoxing in many ways and we're fighting it's really interesting because people generally don't like to change because change is not pleasant all the time.
That's right.
And that's for both sides of the spectrum. So it could be like, I'm going to, juice fast or fast of some sort, but even the change of like, oh, you just won $20 million and your life is about to change.
Yep.
That's also change. That's extremely scary, which goes back to our whole mentality of we as creatures don't want and don't like change because it's uncertain. We're creatures of certainty because that's how we're programmed. So the tiger doesn't eat us down at the river. If we know that if we stay in this box, the tiger doesn't get us. But if we walk out the river around the corner where we don't see, the tiger might get us, or around the corner, there could be an oasis, but we will never know until we give that a shot. But that's how we are in general. So that's why we struggle so much with change. And now on a global level, we're changing physically, mentally, spiritually, all at once. There's this a great shift happening. And you can see it. I mean, even if you don't believe in this, you can see something is happening. The norms that I grew up with and you grew up with are being thrown out the window in a lot of cases in society. Things that people say publicly when I was growing up would never be allowed to say. Things that people are doing now, like people are walking into Walgreens and just grabbing stuff and walking out with a bike. Like, in what world did that ever even a thing that people did? So things are starting to break down and you can start seeing things that were, it's, you could see foundational things of our society start to break down. They're crumbling a bit. Things that we've felt that were, oh, that'll never break down. It's starting to break down. So it's scary, and everyone's just trying to figure it out. Is that,
yes,
is that a good assessment?
Yeah, it's, and that's why I would say semi-jokingly, I tell people, oh, you know, when they say, well, what do you teach? What do you do? And I said, oh, I teach people how to die correctly. And because I know if they actually hear me, what I'm saying, oh, they're going to be good students. And what you're talking about in terms of, it doesn't matter which side or whoever, the change, any kind of change, even if you get, like you said, the positive, you know, you win the lottery and you're instantly a multimillionaire. It sounds good for those of us sitting on the sideline. Oh, just look at what I could do if I had all that money. But it's not any different than someone who's been a slave all their lives, locked up in a cage. And then one day, you know, the slave owner says, okay, you're free to go. With no training, no help, no money, nothing. That's like almost a death sentence for that person.
It's like, right? it's like letting a lion or a gazelle that's been inside of a zoo all its life into the wild.
Exactly.
The concept of, oh, they're free now.
Yeah.
Sounds fantastic.
Exactly.
But 15 minutes later, they're gone. They've been eaten because they have no training or understanding of how this world works.
Exactly.
So I mean,
it's dying.
Exactly.
You have to die from where you were.
But I'm sure you've heard the stories of lottery winners that most of them lose all their money. Yes. Most of them go down. And I actually, early in my career, I did a documentary series that I worked on that I got to see interviews with lottery winners. Mm-hmm. And it was so fascinating to watch. I had six or seven lottery winners and how their lives were so different and how they reacted differently to it. You know, one literally was in a trailer home and then they won, I think, $40 or $50 million. And they lost everybody that was close to them because they couldn't trust them. So they became paranoid. Mm-hmm. And then they said, the only people we trust are our accountant, our lawyer, and our priest. I'm like...
Sounds like a joke.
It sounds like it's a hell of a motley crew you got going there. But it was really interesting how that was a great lesson for me early in my life that I saw that money isn't the end all be all. Because it's so true. So many people say, like, if all the money in the world was distributed equally today,
yes,
in about 5 years, it'd all go back to where it came from. Mm-hmm. Because there's just, you know, if you gave me $1 billion today, I'll try to maneuver that kind of money, but that's just not my expertise. I don't know how to protect myself. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. I'd have to learn and I feel I could educate myself, but it's just something as opposed to someone who built $1 billion along the way over the course of 10 years and learns how to maneuver, learns how the game is played, learn how to do that. You know, you give $1 billion to Elon Musk, he's going to be like, that's lunch. And he's fine with it. Give you or me $1 billion, you'd be like, okay, we got to figure this. This is a whole other world. It's change. But we're using this as an example of change that it doesn't always have to be changes like in bad or good. Even if like tomorrow I wake up and I look like Brad Pitt. So if I wake up tomorrow morning and I'm Brad Pitt, I don't know how to be Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to deal with what he deals with, walking down, the kind of energy that gets thrown at you, the kind of opportunity. There's so much that you would have to adjust quickly as opposed to slowly working into becoming someone like that or getting into that kind of shape or those kind of looks or whatever to get you to that place. I hope I'm not babbling, but does that all make sense?
Yeah. It's, you know, basically in spirit, there's no such thing as dying, right?
Right.
It's eternal life. So what is this thing called dying? Well, most people, when you think of dying, they think about the body expiring, right?
Correct.
No longer alive. That's just one type of dying. But the real underlying experience of dying, even from a spiritual perspective, is, oh, if that soul believed, I am just this body. This is who I am. And the body expires.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And the soul's going, oh my, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. It's they're trying to hold on to that form they associate and identify as themselves. Okay. Over time, that soul, over many incarnations, learns, I'm not the body. I'm more than this body.
As you evolve. Yeah.
As you evolve, you start to recognize, oh, I'm more than this body. But then what's the next stage in that soul's development? Oh, they start to identify themselves as, yes, I'm still partially this physical body, but that's not it. I'm also very emotional. I have feelings and blah, blah, blah. So, and that's not physical. It's something more internal. And so when they get challenged with the emotional stuff, that's worse than death. If they have to let go of something on the emotional level. And then as the soul evolves even further, it becomes, oh, wait, I'm an energy being. and I have power. I'm not helpless. I'm not a victim of circumstances anymore. I could use my will to get what I want and be the top dog and everything, king of the mountain. Oh, for a person like that, they jump out of the window to kill themselves when the economic bubble completely, their money is gone.
Because they're attaching themselves to something that it's what Buddha said. Your suffering is because of attachment.
Exactly. And if you can't let go of that attachment, and letting go of the attachment basically means forgiveness. Yeah, where I'm forgiving this attachment.
Right.
Yeah. And so that doesn't matter if you're forgiving someone else or forgiving yourself. Oh, if I'm angry and begrudge somebody else and blaming them for, doing it to me, if I forgive them, I'm not really forgiving them. I'm forgiving them of my judgment, my blame of them. Mm-hmm. And then if I'm successful in doing that, I still have, okay, what do I do with all this pain? I forgive them of this pain. I'm not making them responsible for it, but I still got it. Now I have to realize, oh yeah, the real forgiveness, I have to forgive myself of that pain.
It seems there's so much in our lives that has to do with forgiving. Not only other people, but forgiving ourselves for making mistakes, quote unquote mistakes, by the way.
Yes. Because we don't really make mistakes.
No, it's not about mistakes. It's more about what we believe that are mistakes based on what other people think of, say about us and the things that we've learned along the way. But everything that we do here is about learning. It's about educating ourselves, about growing and opening ourselves up. And, I always find it fascinating that, people think that, there's these gurus who wake up, they're born as gurus, and they just wake up and they're just like, oh, he knew at one that he knew everything he needed to learn. And that's generally not the truth at all.
Because if that were true, they don't need to reincarnate.
Right. So what they teach here, what Jesus taught here, what Buddha taught here. I mean, just look at Siddhartha's story. I mean, he wasn't born the Buddha. He went through a lot of stuff. He made quote unquote mistakes when he was on his journey, out when he left the castle and left the safety of those walls. And he went with different types of religious sects and trying to figure it all out. He was figuring out. Then after all of that work, he found enlightenment and he's like, oh, I get it now. Now let me go back and teach. But he had to learn all of that during his life. So I think that's something that people need to understand, that we're all here. All of us are here to learn.
To learn. Yep.
And some of us learn earlier than others, but it doesn't matter. You're at the end of the day, you come into this world the same way you left, alone. Alone, but you, yourself, your soul, and God and the source energy. That's who you come into, and that's it. And if you understand that, I think that makes life a little bit easier.
Yes. You know, you know that book, Art of Racing in the Rain?
Yes.
Yeah. And the movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for me, what's the key message in the whole thing was what's kind of said in passing by the driver, you know, the race car driver guy. His secret to winning when he's racing in the rain is, oh, keep your eyes on the destination, on the goal, on the finish line. Don't stare at the big wall coming up that everybody crashes into. Because if you stare at the wall, you're going to crash into it. If you keep your sight on where you're going instead of where you don't want to go, you're going to do fine.
And most of us focus on the negative things in our lives as opposed to the positive things in our life or where we actually want to go. We focus on, oh, I can't do this, or I can't do that, I can do this. Well, it's just like Henry Ford said, if you believe you can or you can't, you're right. And it's very, very true.
And it's when we're looking on a, just not on the physical level, but on a spiritual level, it's the same. That's what clairvoyance is about, is keeping your inner sight on the goal, on your destination. And you can call that destination self-realization, you know, the truth of who you are. Or you can call that destination God realization, right? But whatever you call it, you're if you keep your sight on the undivided, you're not only going to heal yourself, but you're gonna reach your goal, and definitely way faster than if you stare at everything else.
I mean, imagine a Olympic athlete or Olympic racer looking at the hurdles and focusing on each hurdle.
Boom.
They focus at the end line because they understand that the hurdle is coming anyway, and they already been trained how to go over the hurdle. So that's not even a problem for them anymore. Exactly. But if they start focusing on the hurdles, that's when you see the trips. That's when you see the accidents, because they're focusing on it.
And why do they focus on the people who do focus on the hurdles? Why do they do that? Oh, it's simple. Fear.
You read my fear. It's fear. Yeah, they're afraid of, like, am I going to hit? Am I going to hit the hurdle? Am I going to?
Yep.
Guess what? If you say, am I going to hit the hurdle? You've already hit the hurdle.
Exactly. That's how creative we are.
Yep. It's really interesting. It's so difficult. Like, we're talking about things that sound on paper extremely easy, but it isn't something that is easy. It doesn't come intuitively to us. We have to train ourselves to look at the finish line and not look at the hurdle, because again, the negative bias in our brains we've been evolutionarily trained to look at the negative for safety reasons.
Survival. Yes.
Survival. Yep. So what we're talking about is to transcend that, transcend our own programming, which takes practice.
Yes.
It takes training of the mind and of the spirit, specifically of the mind, not as much of the spirit, but of the mind to break through those ideas, those things. And let's not even get into the programming that we get when we're born, and societal programming, and these other things, and traumas that we have to deal with, and all of this stuff.
And if you start looking at all that, you eventually come to, oh, how were you programmed in your last incarnation?
you start getting deep in, like, why did I have this parent, these parents? And why did I have this friend, and why I have this relationship, and why isn't this happening, and all this kind of stuff? It starts adding up.
Yeah. That's why a why question has to be, you know, dumped.
Yeah.
Because that's an intellectual question. It just goes around in circles.
So what's the right question to ask?
the right question to ask is, okay, what's my purpose? What am I here for? You know, where am I going? So when I ask myself, where am I going? Well, the first thing I'm going to become aware of is where I'm already headed as I'm going. But I have to go further than that and going, okay, is that the true direction that I'm here to go to? Oh, no, it's not there. That's not the end game. So it's seeking the truth. Again, you started with the question of, you know, meditation. What part does it play? And I said 100% or 110%. To me, meditation is getting into communication with yourself or with your higher self or with your true self.
Right.
With your uninterrupted self. And as long as you're in communication, you have your sight on that limitlessness.
And for many people, that's scary.
It is.
It's scary to look yourself in the mirror. It's scary to say, I love you to yourself. I forgive you to yourself. It is very, very difficult to do
for
many, many people. And that's why when a lot of people start meditation, they can't get to it because it's literally the ego is telling them, you don't want to go in there.
Yeah.
You don't want to open up that door. But unless you open the door and let the light in, you can't heal it. You can't let it out. You need to let it out you have to bring it into the light in order for it to die in many ways.
Yeah.
If not, it has the power over you. As long as it stays behind that closet door, it has power. But once you throw light on it, you're like, it's not even scary.
Yeah.
What was I scared of?
Yeah. There's no dark. The minute you turn on the light, the darkness, you know, even if you were in a pitch black room, you turn on the light and where's the darkness? But if you stay in that pitch dark room and you think the darkness is real, then you might use a vacuum cleaner, you can broom, Windex, you know, nothing will get rid of that darkness because you can't get rid of a negative, that which is not really there. You could only bring the presence of something that is true, then what's not true just disappears.
So I'll go a little deep with you on this one, Michael. Imagine that the shadow that we all have is not real because the only reason there's shadow is because there's light projecting onto us, creating shadow.
That's right.
The more the light gets intensified, the less the shadow is there. When the light is so bright, there's literally no shadow because there's too much light to be there. But the shadow is not real. It has no strength. It has no power. But where does the light come from? Ah, the source. The source of the light is where the power is actually coming from. The sun is the source. If the God, higher power, whatever you want to call it, is the only reality that there is, where the shadow is just something that's not even tangible. There's no like dark sun projecting darkness onto the world. That doesn't exist.
That's
right. There is truly only light, and darkness happens to be manufactured. It's not real.
And is it manufactured?
Well, in that scenario, it's manufactured because it's hitting us. But
it's manufactured in our mind.
Yeah, exactly.
In consciousness. Yeah. See, awareness is light. If I'm going to
get
technical, I use, when I get to this level, I'll use the word awareness to indicate awareness of all. It's undivided awareness. It's literally light. And then at that level, I talk about consciousness. That's divided awareness. Consciousness is where there's a person, some body, independent unit being aware of something else besides itself, right? So that's consciousness. And we call that consciousness mind. We can fill that mind with awareness, light, spirit. God, whatever you want to call that, or we can fill it with division, thoughts of, you know, a darkness and what makes something feel and seem so real to us? It's our power. Without the intensity of power, you know, it's just the idea. It's just the thing that, oh yeah, that's just your figment of your imagination. But if you put enough life power into it, your creative life energy into it, you're experiencing your life and power in the thing you created, you imagined. And in your mind, in your consciousness, it becomes bigger than life.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And that's what happens when we're stuck. We've made the image in our mind more powerful than it really is. Right. The minute we take our power back from that image and go, oh, that's just the image, we're not stuck.
Now, I'm going to ask you a couple questions I ask all my guests, Michael.
Okay.
What is your mission in this life?
I'd say from the beginning and coming in, I knew I was here to teach and to elaborate a little bit more on that. My awareness of teaching or a teacher isn't someone who knows it all.
Right.
It's more, we're, like you said, I absolutely, every single one of us, if we're incarnated on this planet, we're here to learn something. To simplify it down to the bottom line, what are we all here to learn is how to say hello to each other and to everything, right? And the purpose of our physical body, why do we incarnate into this device? We have smartphones. What are smartphones for? With a trillion apps you can put in it, but everything about a smartphone is for the ultimate purpose of communication. Communication of information, as when we're downloading information or we're putting out information, communication in images, communication in sound, communication with music, whatever. It's all communication. So a smartphone is essentially a communication device. Our body is exactly that way. We have a body because this body is our single potent, sophisticated communication device in order for us, immortal, limitless, undivided spirit, to communicate in this world of division. So that's
all right. That's a great answer, sir. That's a great answer.
So I'm here. I had to learn to communicate first, and I'm always learning to communicate. Mm-hmm. Awareness comes from communicating in a new space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Communicating with something that you never communicated with before.
Now, what is the ultimate purpose of life?
Is to be yourself.
Fair enough. Now, where can people find out more about you, your books, your courses, and how they can reach out to you?
MichaelTamura.com. Tamura is T as in Tom, A M as in Mary, U R A. So MichaelTamura.com. And that's our website.
Michael.
Also, we have a once a week live broadcast on the internet, on the voiceamerica.com network. Our show is called Living the Miracle with Michael and Raphael Tamura.
Michael, it has been an absolute joy talking to you, my friend.
Likewise.
I hope to have you back because I know we can talk
forever
days and days about this stuff. So I appreciate you. I appreciate all the work you've done in your life thus far and the work you could be doing moving forward and all the help that you've been giving the world. So I truly appreciate everything you've done. And thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate what you're doing as well. Thank you very much for letting me be here.
I want to thank Michael so much for that transformative conversation. I really appreciate you, Michael. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/079. And if you've only been listening to this over podcast and you want to watch these amazing conversations, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at nextlevelsoul.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, trust the journey. It is here to teach you. I'll talk to you soon.